I'm Kate Liston Mills, and I am so excited to be here as guest presenter of Little Fictions on Air. Each episode, I will be bringing you a short story read by the author or recorded by an actor at one of the Little Fictions live events. Before I present today's short story, I'd like to introduce myself. I am an author who lives and writes on the far south coast of New South Wales in a little town called Pambula. I'm also the author of The Waterfowl Are Drunk, a collection of short stories about Pambula, published by Spineless Wonders. Stories from my collection have been performed at Little Fictions events and featured in this very program. You can find an interview with me recorded in 2019 by Little Fictions on Air host Ella Watson-Russell. In this episode today, we feature the short story Rent by Melbourne writer Anthony Lynch. Anthony's work has also been shortlisted for the Wesley Michelle Wright Prize in Poetry and the Queensland Steel Rudd Australian Short Story Award. Rent tells the story of Ray, a postgrad uni student, and the unexpected problems she encounters with her new housemate, Astrid. It is read by actor Holly Myers. Here is Rent by Anthony Lynch.
She'd put a notice in the union building for rent. Room in two-bedroom terrace, within walking distance or short tram ride of uni. To share with mature postgrad, $155 per week, shared expenses. Would help to like dogs. Four people inquired. One was a first-year student with peroxide hair and a party girl air, who Ray quickly dismissed. The second, a country boy, was a newcomer to the city and to housework. The third, a postgrad in marketing, had a two-year-old, enough said. Astrid was different. Older and at least 45, maybe 50, plump and grey. Her skin was puffy and clammy and shone in the light. Her double chin was already adding another fold. When she sat down in the small dark lounge of Ray's rented terrace, she was out of breath, as if from running. But Ray had picked her up in her old Suzuki. Astrid was new to Melbourne and had no idea how to find her house. She was staying in a city hotel and wanted something homely. She told Ray, "You wouldn't believe how sick of five-star accommodation you can get. Give me normalcy." Yes, she preferred quiet. No, the rent wasn't a problem. Yes, she loved dogs. She and Nana bonded immediately. After 2 minutes, Nana was dough on the ground, her every joint kneaded by Astrid. Ray stood smiling while Astrid cooed. When Astrid called the next day from a public phone, Ray told her yes. She sensed they had little in common, that Astrid was escaping more than the job she quit. There was a bruised quality about her, her flesh heaving with something unspoken. But she was the only one likely candidate, and she liked dogs. Astrid moved in with a $2 shop carry-all and a coat over her arm. The rest of her luggage would be shipped down. Her breath came heavily as she lugged the bag through the doorway, face awash with sweat. She looked a notch above a bag lady.
"Where's my baby?"
she said, after dropping her bag to the floor. Ray let Nana in for 15 minutes. Astrid massaged Nana's ears, neck, back and chest. Already Ray feared she'd made a mistake. Ray cooked dinner for them both. Each would make their own meals, but she thought that on the first night she would make an effort. They ate pasta and salad at the small kitchen table. Astrid spoke little and Ray reached for topics of conversation. What exactly was the new job? A management position in human resources. She would reposition the business. Did she have family? One brother who was an art dealer in France. The other an investment broker in New York. Haven't seen them in donkeys. Parents killed years ago in a helicopter crash. They were surveying a cattle station they were about to buy. "I've never quite got over it," she said. They watched a half hour of My Kitchen Rules, before Ray escaped to her thesis. "Make yourself at home," she said. Later, she put her head in the door and said, "Good night." Astrid remained in front of the TV. Mid-morning, Astrid rose and showered. Ray gave her a towel. Astrid would buy her own towels and linen, but in the meanwhile, Ray loaned hers. She began preparing for the class she would teach that afternoon. After half an hour, Astrid knocked on the door. "Would you remind me where I go for shopping? I thought I might get a few things." Ray told her of the tram 5 minutes away, the 4 stops she needed to take. A 7-Eleven was closer, but the shopping centre was better. Ray thought it best she familiarise herself with the tram route. "You don't need anything yourself, do you?" Astrid asked. "No thanks, sir. You'll have enough to carry." "I meant if you needed to go, I could get a lift." Ray drove her to the shops. An interruption, but she'd taught the class before and could wing it if need be. Astrid came along with nothing and would need to stock up. Too much to lug on a tram, especially in her shape. Back home, Ray saw that most of Astrid's food was frozen. Boxed meals you only need reheat. Meat and 3 factory-modified veggies. A frozen pizza, frozen Danish, and cream and ice cream cornflakes. The fridge freezer resembled a bookshelf. When Ray headed off to teach her class, Astrid was watching Dr. Phil on TV. She returned, late afternoon, to find Astrid still in front of the TV, watching The Bold and the Beautiful. "Had a good afternoon?" Ray asked.
"Oh, we've had a nice time together, haven't we, baby?"
She spoke to Nana rather than to Ray.
"Yes, you are beautiful."
"I'll feed the dog," Ray said. Ray woke in the night to a series of snorts vibrating the air. She rose, opened her door and stepped into the hallway. Astrid's door was open, and through it came slow currents of sound, as if rising from the sea, a prolonged whistle like a whale song. Then staccato air stopping as if something needed urgent unplugging. Finally, a saving breath filling the back of the throat. Ray took a few steps, pulled Astrid's door to. After the first bird calls of morning, she regained sleep. Relief came only when Astrid walked Nana. She walked her around the neighbourhood. Ray did not discourage Astrid. It removed her from the house. Astrid's job would commence the following week. Things would change. The following Monday, Astrid left for work. Ray explained the tram route, where she should change, how and when she must scan on and scan off, check the tram stop numbers. It wasn't hard. Astrid's position was part-time, but Ray figured her gone 6 or 7 hours a day, 4 days a week, she would regain her house. Astrid's work was on the other side of town, her travelling time extending her absence from the tiny terrace. Ray returned her laptop, her books, to the kitchen table where she jabbed revisions into her thesis. Her dissertation on Žižek and contemporary popular narrative was nearly complete. She wondered distractedly how Žižek would position Astrid as a conscious being in the existing social order. When Astrid came home from her first day of work, Ray cooked her dinner and poured her a glass of wine. It seemed the decent thing to do. The job was exactly as she expected, neither good nor bad. The people were barely civil. Astrid already knew her role better than the woman who employed her. On Wednesday, Astrid did not rouse from her bed. Ray looked in at her, the familiar mound of bedclothes rising and falling with Astrid's breathing. She hesitated at the doorway. Had she slept in? Changed her Monday to Thursday schedule? It was nearing 9. "Astrid," called Ray. "Astrid!" She tried to balance a whisper against the volume needed to wake the sleeper. Astrid's heavy breathing continued. Ray stepped forward, reached out her hand, touched the laden mound and repeated her name. She prodded harder and the rhythm of the breaths changed. The mound moved. Ray had a flash from her childhood of a primary school concert when 2 boys mimicked Simon and Garfunkel singing "I Am a Rock." one of them crabbing across the stage under a grey blanket. "Sorry," Ray said to the mound. "I thought I'd check. Aren't you due to work? Astrid." With great effort, Astrid popped herself up on one arm, a waft of body over to met Ray. "Oh, I'm not feeling the best," she said. "Oh, I won't go in today." When Ray was about to leave for her class, Astrid had still not risen. She checked if there was anything she needed. Astrid murmured, "No." She worried that Astrid's employer would make of this, but there was nothing she could do. Friday was not a work day for Astrid, and she mooched about the house in the same way she did most days. Due to illness or sloth, she remained in her nightie and dressing gown. Perhaps she struggled with her periods, Ray thought. Women under the same roof supposedly fell into monthly accord, but the thought that she and Astrid would achieve physiological harmony repelled her. Astrid remained in her nightclothes all weekend, dressing only to take Nana for walks. The following Monday, Astrid returned to work. Upon coming home, she spoke little of her job. Ray did not want lengthy debriefings, but she always felt communication helped household harmony. Starting a new job wasn't easy. Ray thought Astrid might be finding it harder than most. She was not from Melbourne, nor was she the young, malleable aspirant employers often preferred. She was far from glamorous, her personality no crowd pleaser. On Wednesday morning, Astrid again did not go to work. Ray found her at the kitchen table, bent over a mug, hair falling like kelp about her face. "You okay?" she asked. "Yeah." She lifted her head and pulled the hair back from one side of her face. "Off to work?" It came out like a plea. "Might stay home." "Oh, not well." "Oh, that job doesn't agree with me." Oh, Astrid took a deep breath. "Oh, it's not the kind of workplace I find conducive to my well-being." "Haven't they helped you settle in?" "Oh, I've suggested they look at their induction program, but they're a younger crowd, you know, fixated on some e-solution to an invented problem." "That's difficult."
"They don't listen to experience. I've said to them, I can fix this for you."
"Well, you can lead a horse to water."
"I'm sorry," said Ray. "You don't think, nevertheless, you should go in and talk to your manager? Let them know how they might help you?"
She found herself in counselling mode, nodding, offering gentle questions, her hands upturned like supplicating Jesus. She felt some sympathy. She imagined the workplace, the women nothing like Astrid with their ironed hair, clip-art eyebrows and enamel bodies. Astrid lounged about the house until mid-afternoon, then dressed to walk Nana. The following days repeated themselves, her only diversions, TV and Nana. The situation was in many ways dire. The terrace was small. When Ray rented it 5 years ago, she had dubbed it the Matchbox. It was a landing pad, not a place you spent all day in another's company. A factor in sharing with Astrid was her belief that Astrid would be out most days. Any hope she might return to her position had vanished. When she suggested Centrelink, Astrid said, "Oh no, I don't think that's for me. Those queues and the people. Any day now my investment funds will arrive."
She kept tally of what Astrid owed. Food, rent, electricity, gas. Already over $1,200. She would say, "Here's the bill. I'll note your share down for when your money comes." Astrid would murmur and keep her eyes on the TV. Ray began to think she had no intention of paying. She was struck by her grey dishevelment, her rankness. She sometimes eyed Astrid across the room. Easy, she was never out of sight. She was growing bigger. The enormous bulk of her swamped the old couch and the springs whined underneath. The round puddle of her face framed against the kitchen window bore a downy pelt of hair. And on the grey, perspiring skin, Ray saw small creatures, sea monkeys swimming the oceans that filled each giant pore. She regarded the other woman with a fascination we save for the ugly.
Going to the bathroom in the night, she sometimes saw her housemate in the living room, swaddled in a blanket, transfixed before the silent TV that flickered in the dark like starlight. Her hand would move again and again between a packet of Arnott clicks and the vent she called her mouth, a kind of alien night feeding. You need to find work, Ray said. I need you to pay rent. Astrid nodded and smiled. One night, Ray snatched the remote from Astrid's lap and muted the TV. Get a job! She wanted to yell. She saw herself ugly now, too. A thin-lipped hardliner. This is what she had done to me, she told herself. 2 days later, Astrid fed the leftovers of a vegetarian lasagna, 3/4 of the dish, to Nana. Ray said, we have to talk about the living arrangements. Astrid said, it's not 5-star, but I'm feeling quite at home, thank you. Ray said, you have to leave. They agreed Astrid would look for other accommodation. A week passed with no sign of Astrid leaving. She was exploring options, she said. Ray thought her only explorations were to the aisles of the 7-Eleven. Any luck? She asked. Astrid said she had inspected an executive suite closer to the city. It was a nice apartment, she said. Many would love it, but at the end of the day, it just wasn't me. The sick feeling growing in Ray's stomach became a stabbing pain. The next day, she rang the agent. Over the 5 years, she'd built a relationship. She had a long talk with the agent. The agent said she'd see what she could do. 4 days later, the notice came. Registered mail, official. 14 days. It has come to our attention that the premises are being sublet by the tenant without the landlord's consent. She showed Astrid the notice. Sorry, she said. Seems we both have to move. Ray took her unwanted belongings to St. Vinny's, some items she'd bought from the op shop, and she took back, still with their price tags. Junk went into the bin, some books she sold to a bookseller, just a few. There was no time to sort. The timing was appalling, her thesis nearing completion, 2 months from hand in. She adopted a military approach, a frenzied hour, then back to Zizek. In as far as she could, she prepared for her packing, rather than actually packing. Astrid could pack and leave in minutes. Her belongings remained at the clothes she wore, and the $2 carry-all for the few that were left. The person causing the massive disruption of an unwanted move could move herself at whim. Late afternoons, Astrid would abandon grimy nightwear for depression-inducing daywear and take Nana for her walk. Nana was a queen of the canine world. She did not suffer fools and was fearsome in appearance. You could walk anywhere with that dog, but in her 12 years, she'd bitten only 2 people. An addict cotinent which had been off his head and an idiot aunt who had lurched over her. In Ray's opinion, both got just desserts. Smart too. When Ray rode her bike down a road, Nana ran parallel to her on the footpath, stopping at each intersection until Ray gave the words to cross. But with Astrid, Nana was jelly. Perhaps with age she's lost discernment, easily bought with pettings and food. She couldn't be hungry, Ray would say. Astrid fed her anyway, and later would lead Nana to her bedroom. Ray told her she did not want Nana on the bed.
I have to spend time with my baby, Astrid said. I must have visiting rights wherever you go.
Ray had no intention of giving Astrid visiting rights of any kind. That same day, Ray returned home and could find Nana nowhere. She poked her head into Astrid's bedroom, where the usual lump of bedclothes mounted over her housemate, and a foil tray empties its frozen dinner sat on the floor. Astrid, she called. Astrid! The lump moved. A ridge of blanket rose, then collapsed on itself, revealing a tat of grey hair. The bedclothes moved again, and a black and tan foot poked from the edge of the bed. Ray stepped forward and flung the blankets off the bed. Nana blinked back at her, slowly raising her head, flanked by the pale slabs of Astrid's legs. She had a vision of her dog in a butcher's shop. Out! Ray shouted. The dog rose on the unsteady sea of bed, teetered, then dropped her old body to the floor and trotted out. I told you, Ray said. I don't know how many times I've put up with a lot. TV, day and night, you barely paid a cent. The least you could do is respect what I asked. She did not try to hide her anger.
She gets lonely, Astrid said. You're not there for her. Even when you're here, you're not really there for her. That's why Nana loves me.
Unbelievable, Ray yelled. She picked up the foil tray and frisbeed it over the bed and turned to walk out. Then she turned back. Nana and I have been there for each other for 12 years. 12 years, and shit, it feels that long I've had to put up with you. She walked out, grabbing the bedroom door and slamming it behind her. From the living room, Nana gave a crowd reproving look. Later, she thought she shouldn't have slammed the door and regretted slightly yelling. Astrid was lonely, penniless, delusional. A Zizek poster girl for the unconscious fantasy structuring reality. But she had reached her limit. Her final term class fell 3 days before the move. She shared a cake with her students, some of whom, the young women, brought in sponges or homemade biscuits of their own. The last class of term was always the best. Her students thanked her. The house was quiet when she returned. No TV, no whale song, no honking from Astrid's bedroom. She unpacked her laptop, put on the kettle, looked in Astrid's doorway. The room was empty. The bed roughly made. She called her name. There was nothing. She stepped inside and found the wardrobe open. The striped $2 shop carry-all, coat and clothes, gone. She lifted the pillow, but Astrid's nightwear was not buried beneath. She went to the bathroom, found Astrid's underpants and hairy toothbrush, gone. She found no note, no key on the bench or under the doormat. She would change the locks as a precaution, phone the agent in the morning. She would reapply for her terrace, a formality. Unpack her belongings, reorganize, a happy electricity ran through her. The matchbox was hers, hers alone. She opened the back door, which Astrid had left unlocked, expecting the nuzzle of her knees and crutch. But Nana was not on the other side. She walked into the small backyard, the same metal chairs and table, the ragged climber on the back fence, the bizarre giant palm stretching into sky. Nana, she called. Nana! Suddenly, she was like a frightened child, calling her grandmother. There was no Nana basking in the late afternoon sun, nor dancing, frantic for dinner. She called again, running the perimeter of the fence, checking the shaky palings that held her old hound safely in their confines. She ran back inside and into Astrid's bedroom, dropped to the floor and looked under the bed. Ran to her own bedroom and did the same. Ran back to the living room and stood in the middle, her heart pounding. Returned to the back door, tears pricked her eyes. There was Nana's water bowl, half full, a tiny insect flat and lifeless on the surface. The red lead that she hung on the nail nowhere in sight. She tore down the hallway, through the front door, 3 steps and out the broken front gate, looking left and right and right and left. The street corner, the tram line, the dented stop sign at the intersection staring back. She called and ran.
That was Rent by Anthony Lynch. It was read by Holly Myers and recorded live at Knox Street Bar in Sydney. Anthony's story certainly gets us thinking about the risks of house sharing with strangers, but I'm not sure that he is meaning for us to see the characters in black and white. Certainly Ray found Astrid a very challenging person to live with, but Ray's dog Nana was very happy to have Astrid's constant attention. Like all great storytelling, the ending of Rent gets us thinking about the deeper meaning of the story. Anthony's story, Rent, was published by Spineless Wonders as part of the 2016 Carmel Bird Short Fiction Award, which was judged by Michael McGurr. I was keen to find out more about this story and about Anthony's writing and reading habits. Here's what I found out from an interview he did with Spineless Wonders when his story was first published. To begin with, I wanted to know what drove Anthony to write the story Rent. He said that he was writing a series of stories dealing with notions of home and housing in its various forms, and that Rent is one of those stories in that series. I wanted to write a story about a renter, he said, and I like the idea that a character like Astrid might provoke both sympathy and an element of revulsion. The story arose out of various incidents conveyed to me by friends, and I melded them together and came up with a character and a plot, which later became Rent. So what about Anthony's process of writing? For instance, how did he approach a new story? Did he begin with a clear plan of where the narrative would go, or was it more of a let's see what unfolds here kind of approach? A story for me, he said, can be driven by a particular incident I've imagined or heard about, a setting or a character. Or I might start with dialogue and see where that takes things. In the latter case, it's easy to be left without a plot, though I have written the occasional short, dialogue-driven story nonetheless. A story based on an event, and to a lesser extent on a character or setting, is likely to suggest some kind of plot, though I almost never have anything so structured as a scene-by-scene plan. The approach I take to most stories is something of a hybrid. Here's an idea that has within it the suggestion of a plot. But I don't know exactly where it's going. So we often find that effective writers are also great readers. So I wanted to know if there was one particular author or book that Anthony looked to as a source of inspiration for his writing. Like, what was he reading now, and did he have any recommendations? When it comes to short fiction, he said, I look to some of the usual suspects, Raymond Carver, Ernest Hemingway, John Cheever, and Grace Paley. They help remind me about the value of being concise, among other things. I read a lot of Kafka and Salinger when I was younger. Now I read fairly widely, including poetry. Simon Armitage is a poet I've read often, as he manages concision with narrative punch. Turning to novels Homer and Langley by E.L. Doctorow and Harvest by Jim Crace are favourites, each in its own way an example of exhaustive historical research effectively brought to bear on very particular situations and characters. At the moment, however, I'm reading Self-Help by Laurie Moore. It was Moore's first collection of short stories from 1985, and I think it's brilliant, enormously sharp, funny, insightful. It's easy to overdo similes, but she fearlessly packs them in, her face blank as a large Kleenex, and they arrive in killer lines. As a writer as well as a mother and a teacher, I know how hard it is to juggle the different demands on my time. So how did Anthony fit writing into his day-to-day life? Did he have any unusual writing habits? And did he have any advice to share for those stuck in a writing slump? Writing doesn't fit in enough, he said. I recently started back at a full-time editing job, and it's a long commute each day from door to door. When I can, on the train, I get a seat with a tray that pulls down before me, and for that hour, I try to write. I find the limitations of time and space helpful. There's nothing I can do but sit in that space. It can be the most productive time of my day. I write slowly, but I get something down. Perhaps the movement of the train helps. If I'm stuck for a subject, I'll write about what's around me, which might explain why I wrote a poetry collection called Night Train. If, like me, you've enjoyed finding out about the story behind the story and about the writing life, you can find lots of interviews with Australian authors on the Spineless Wonders blog. Or if you are looking for more stories like this one to read on your device, you'll find lots on the Spineless Wonders website under the Digital Stories tab at www.shortaustralianstories.com.au. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Little Fictions on Air is produced by Bronwyn Meehan with the production assistance by Caddy Hansen. I'm Kate Liston-Mills. Please join me again for Little Fictions on Air.